Snyder, thank you so much for participating in this project for the Hall of Fame. As we were saying before, this is for the benefit of people 50, 60 years from now who would like to sit down and get to know you, know your life, know what made you a Hall of Famer. So basically where we start is, who put the first baseball in your hands? How did you develop your love for the game?
My father was raised in Ohio, and he became an ardent baseball fan. And when he married my mother, he was in the Navy and met my mother out in Southern California in Los Angeles. And they in turn got married, and then I was born. And right away, my father started putting the baseball bat on my left shoulder. He wanted me to hit left-handed. He says, because most major league ballparks are made for left-handed hitters. The fences are a little bit closer, and first base is a couple of steps closer when you're running to first base from the left side of home plate, from the left-handed batter's side of home plate. And so that's the way I started. I started playing softball when I was in the fourth grade in elementary school. Fast pitch softball, not the rocking chair softball that they have going today, but I played fast pitch softball and I pitched, and I think that taught me to have a fast, quick bat when I went into hardball. And I went on, went into high school and started playing regular baseball, and started playing pretty well. At the age of 14, I was playing against grown men in Southern California in semi-pro baseball and holding my own. I wasn't excelling, but I was holding my own. I was still growing and getting stronger. And a couple of years later, when I was a junior in high school, I pitched on the high school baseball team, and I batted fourth in the batting order because I could hit, and I'm a pretty good hitter. And the scouts were following me around. At that particular time, the baseball scouts, they didn't have a draft. They just, if they saw somebody they liked, they could sign them. So I became a Brooklyn Dodger fan in 1941 when the Dodgers lost the World Series to the Yankees when a pitch got by the catcher, Mickey Owen, and they claimed it was a spitball. And Tommy Henrick swung at it and missed it. And it got by Mickey Owen, and Tommy Henrick got to first base. And the Dodgers were ahead by a couple of runs. And the Yankees scored and ended up winning the game and eventually the World Series. And that strikeout was basically the change of the momentum to the Yankee side, and they went on to win from there. So I became a baseball fan in Southern California because Major League Baseball was only as far west as St. Louis then. And I watched Pacific Coast League baseball a lot when I was a youngster, and I had a lot of great players playing in Los Angeles for the Cub organization, and the Hollywood Stars were the Pittsburgh Pirate organization. So I got to see the Los Angeles Angels and Hollywood Stars play ball, and saw a lot of former big leaguers play in that league, and I just fell in love with baseball, and fortunately I became a Major League Baseball player.
Did you play semi-pro with your father? Your father was semi-pro player?
No, my father didn't play.
Oh, okay.
My father just loved the game, and he taught me all he could, and then my coaches and my instructors carried it on from there.
Do you think you would be in the Hall of Fame if your father didn't put the bat on your left shoulder?
If my father had to put the bat on my left shoulder, I would talk to him about that later on in my high school career. I said, Dad, I do everything right-handed. Let's see if I can switch hit. He says, well, you perfect batting left-handed first, and then we'll try and see if you can switch hit. I never perfected batting left-handed, so I never tried to switch hit, but I play golf right-handed. I don't have a great swing, but
I enjoy it and everything.
But I enjoy it very much.
That's great.
Okay. Do you remember when you signed? Was there any other team that you considered signing with, or was it always the Dodgers?
Well, I like the Brooklyn Dodgers because of the 41 when they lost the World Series. I was listening to it on the radio, and it broke my heart when they got beat the way they did. And P.B. Reese was just starting. He was a shortstop on the Dodgers, became a captain of the team and a very good friend of mine. And Pete Reeser, who was a center fielder and a very good hitter, and I was an outfielder and halfway decent, but so they became my favorite team. And there were three other teams after me. The St. Louis Cardinals, the Cincinnati Reds, and the Pittsburgh Pirates were all trying to sign me. But the scout for the Brooklyn Dodgers took the bull by the horn and came in one day and he says, "I'm going to sign you." And it was during World War II, and I knew that after this one season, I was 17 years of age at the time, and after I played 1 year of pro ball, I was going to be drafted into the military.
Okay.
So rather than go to college, I had a couple offers to go to college, and play football. Right? I had one problem in football. I just wasn't mean enough or didn't like to mix it up as much as they like to mix it up. So I passed. I had a good arm. I threw the ball, but I opted to pro baseball because that was my best sport.
Do you remember what you signed for?
Definitely. It's not going to sound like very much. And it wasn't very much. But I signed for $750 bonus and $250 a month salary. And I remember when I went to spring training with the Dodgers in Bear Mountain, New York, and we trained at West Point in the field house. Mm. They put nets all around where we could take batting practice inside because there was snow on the ground outside. But there was no travel then because of World War II. The trains were all taken up. There weren't very many airplanes at that particular time. And so we had to all come into New York and had our spring training in the field house in West Point. And I was sent to Newport News, Virginia for my first year in minor league baseball. And I found out what humidity was because we had very little humidity in Southern California. And down in Newport News, Virginia, you walk out of the house and you're sweating in the summertime. And I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun playing my first year of minor league baseball, and then I was drafted into the military and into the Navy.
Followed your father into the Navy. Yeah. You were a submariner.
I was in the submarine part of the Navy, not the subs themselves, but I was on a submarine tender.
Oh, okay.
Which we repaired the subs when they came back from the Pacific on their duty trip where they tried to sink ships and what have you. And we would repair the subs and get it ready, stock it and everything, get it ready so that they'd go back out on another tour of duty after their R&R was over. So that primarily was my duty. I actually didn't repair the submarines. I was just a seaman first class and just did deck duty and things like that. Swept the ship down twice a day and things like that. But well, I was just 18 years old and didn't know much about engines or didn't know much about a ship or anything. I had to learn how to tie knots and things like that. But I was in 18 months, then the war ended and I got out and went into my second year of pro ball, second half a year actually, because I got out in July and I went to Fort Worth, Texas and played in Fort Worth, Texas.
Did you play ball in the Navy? I know a lot of ball players did. Was there any opportunity to play?
Well, whenever I could get off the ship, I played for the ship's team, and then we played the Marines. So there's a Marine base right by the dock where we were docked in Guam, and I would play. I hit this Marine team pretty good. I hit several home runs off of them, and they finally took me aside one day and said, "Look, if you'd like to play for us too, we'll get you a short haircut." And I don't have anything cut short anymore. They said, "We'll get you a short haircut, get you some dog tags, and make you look like a Marine, and you can play for us." Excuse me. So I said, okay. And so I played for this Marine team as a Marine, even though I was in the Navy.
That's funny.
Can you go back a minute to your first experience playing in the minor leagues? How much of a change was it playing semi-pro in high school ball in L.A. to going and playing in the Dodgers organization?
Well, the difference between playing pro baseball and high school baseball, let's say, is that you play a game every day. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how good you can get when you play every day and practice every day. And I didn't realize at the time that was so important to get an opportunity to play every day and how good you could get at hitting the ball, catching the ball, fielding the ball, and what have you. But I think that's the big difference. And getting the instruction that we got in spring training, hitting instruction, fielding instruction, how to play the game, how to play it the Dodger way is what they would say in the meetings. This is the way we do it. This is the way we want you to do it. So yeah, there's a big learning process involved, and you get the finer points of the game. You get to learn the game a lot better. Branch Rickey, during spring training, would have meetings, and all the prospects would be there. All the guys that were in the organization would be there, and he'd give us lectures on how to run the bases, how to play the outfield, how to play the infield, the whole bit. We'd get that in our lectures. And it's amazing how many guys went on in their careers to become managers in the minor leagues and major leagues from the Brooklyn Dodger organization because of the way they were schooled in the organization.
So even at that time, baseball the Dodger way was an accepted known phrase within the game.
Right. The game was played the same in the lower classifications in the minor leagues. You had the same cutoff plays, you had the same signs, you had everything was the same, so that as you advanced up in the organization, everything was the same. Just the competition was a little bit stiffer and a little bit tougher, but you played it the Dodger way. And they had a booklet that they gave everybody on all the different types of plays, the bunt plays, the defense for a bunt play, and everything like that. And everybody did it the same way, and that way you're not confused when you step up a grade.
Now, did other organizations do things like that, booklets and lectures and meetings?
Eventually some did, but there was an awful lot of guys that we would get in trades from other teams that weren't schooled quite that well and had to be reschooled and told the way we do a certain thing, kickoff play or something like that. And didn't take long, but they'd find out right away just how they were schooled, and some of the organizations didn't fool with that. They just gave you a bat and a ball and a glove and said, go out and play. And they weren't all that successful doing it that way rather than to have certain ways to do things.
Was it quite obvious that Branch Rickey was a man ahead of his time? I mean, did he appear to a youngster to be a genius or just someone giving another lecture?
I'm glad you said what you said about being ahead of his time. No, I don't think he was ahead of his time. He had a knack of looking at a youngster, let's say 17 or 18 year old youngster, and being able to project 5 years from now how he's going to be built and how he's going to fit in to the organization. And that's unique because there aren't too many people who can do that and be correct most of the time. I know that he brought Gil Hodges and I into his office one day, Branch Rickey did. And this is in 1947 when Jackie broke in. And Gil was a third string catcher and I was the sixth outfielder on the club. I'd just gotten out of the service in July of the year before and I finished the season at Fort Worth. I went to spring training and I was on the team, and I had to be kept, because of a military rule, had to be kept till July 4th before I could be sent to the minor leagues to get more seasoning. So I knew I didn't belong, but I was there. Well, Gil and I were sitting in Branch Rickey's office, and he says, you know, in about 3 years from now, you two guys are going to be leading this team in home runs, and you're going to be leading this team in RBIs. And Gil and I both looked at each other, and we got up and left his office after a while, after he talked to us a little bit more. And Gil said to me, he says, how can he say that, Duke? He says, I'm the third string catcher, and you're the sixth outfielder, and neither one of us get to play. And yet 3 years from now, we're going to be leading the team in home runs and RBIs. But that was the way Ricky could size you up.
Wow.
And he knew exactly what I needed to work on. He knew exactly what Gil needed to work on. They moved him to first base. He became a Hall of Fame first baseman as far as I'm concerned. And I think probably by the time we show this interview, he might be in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he's a Hall of Famer as far as I'm concerned. And I got into the Hall of Fame, and Branch Rickey was right. We were leading the team in home runs and RBIs, and plus playing very solid defense for him.
When did you know you were going to be able to play in the majors?
I think the happiest moment in my baseball career was when I put the Brooklyn Dodger uniform. This might sound a little corny to you, but it's when I put the Brooklyn Dodger uniform on and knew that I belonged in that uniform. And that didn't happen for a while because I needed to play more, I needed more experience. But one day I put it on and I say, hey, I belong in this uniform. Then I was a major league ball player. Always wanted to be one, but it took a while before I really in my own mind knew that I was one.
Mm-hmm. Is that 47? Or
no, this would be more like 49.
Oh, okay.
Because I went to the minor leagues in 47. I went to the minor leagues in 48 for a few months. Then I came back in August. I went to Montreal, which was a farm team of ours then, and played. And I came back 1st of August, and I became a regular center fielder on the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1948.
Okay.
So I think it was 1949 before I really knew that I belonged in that uniform.
Now, going back to 47, I think it's very important. The Dodgers, not only as a baseball team, they made a sociological statement that year. You were a rookie on team with another rookie, Jackie Robinson. Were you in Montreal with Jackie? You were from LA. How did you view this? Did you see the things that he went through basically the same way he did, because neither of you was used to segregation, the South and all that? Could you talk a little about that?
You've done quite a bit of research on this. I can see that. When I was a youngster growing up in Southern California, the school systems were a little bit different. And I had 4 years of junior high school, which went through the 10th grade.
Oh.
And when I was in the 9th and 10th grades, Jackie Robinson was going to Pasadena Junior College, the first 2 years of college. And I would go down to the junior college in Compton, where I was raised in California. I would go down and watch him play football on Friday nights. When Pasadena would come to town, I would always go to the game and see Jackie play football. Hmm. I'd see him play basketball a couple of times during the year. I'd see him in the long jump, and I'd see him play baseball in those years.
Okay.
And then he went to UCLA, and I managed to have my dad or a friend take me to UCLA to see him participate in football, basketball, and baseball at UCLA. So he became a sports idol of mine when I was a youngster growing up in Southern California. And I marveled at the way he could play baseball. He was not fast, but he could run. I wasn't fat. I wasn't what you call a base-stealing speed, but I could run. But I watched Jackie, and he could stop and start faster than anybody I've ever seen. He got a kickoff one time against Compton in football when he was at Pasadena, and he reversed his field twice, and the third time he came around, he went for a touchdown, 80-some yards, but he actually ran about 175 yards because he dodged everybody. I think everybody on the team had at least two chances to tackle him, and the way he could stop and start, nobody's touched him yet. He went for a touchdown. Mm. And I remember this just like it was yesterday. I can close my eyes and picture it, in fact. The way Jackie would run the bases, getting a rundown play, and there'd be six fillies. They got a picture down in Vero Beach, Florida, Dodger spring training. Have a picture down there of a rundown with the fillies, and there's six Philadelphia players in the rundown with Jackie, and Jackie ended up scoring. He was That's the way he could stop and start.
Wow.
And it was a marvel. There's a quarterback for Virginia Tech, Vic,
right.
a year or so ago, and he runs a little bit like Jackie did. He can stop and start and avoid being tackled or even touched
okay.
an awful lot of the time.
So, 47, you knew the athlete. Did you know him as a person by that time? Or?
The only time I ever had a chance to talk with Jackie when I was in junior high school was they were playing a baseball game, and they scheduled their track meets at the same place they were playing their baseball games so he could go over and win the long jump in track. And I was watching the baseball game. And about the fifth inning, someone came over and Pasadena was at bat. And they said, okay, Jackie. And Jackie trotted over to the track field. And I was there, and a couple friends of mine were there. And I said, Mr. Robinson, I said, where are you going? He says, I'm going over to win this long jump and come back and finish this ball game. And he says, Compton doesn't have a very good long jumper, so I'm going to do it in my baseball uniform. I'll win the long jump in my baseball uniform. He went over and took one jump, won the long jump, and came back and finished the baseball game. So, you know, I idolized the guy. I knew what a great athlete and what a great competitor that he was. And when opening day was his first day, opening day was my first day. And I'm sitting on the bench watching Jackie perform. And it was such a thrill just to be in the big leagues. I was a rookie, he was a rookie, but he really wasn't a rookie. He played in the Negro Leagues for so many years, and he played college ball, and he'd had a lot of experience. And he helped the Dodgers win the pennant that year. He was the Rookie of the Year, hit very well, played first base, but he had to learn the position. But he's such a good athlete, he could learn any position.
Were you surprised going into the South or the border states at the treatment? Were you prepared to see what he had to go through?
No, I wasn't prepared to see what Jackie had to go through. I know that my first year, I was 17 years old, and I was in Newport News, Virginia, and I lived in a private home, and this elderly lady had a home, and she rented a couple of rooms out to a couple of us ball players, and I would take the bus into the ballpark, and I get on the bus, and I always like to sit in the back of the bus. I put my money in the little slot. I walk back to the back of the bus and I'd sit down. And there were quite a few black people back there, but that didn't make any difference to me. I'm from Southern California. I sat and had buddies, black friends and Japanese friends out in Southern California, and they were my best friends. It didn't bother me who was sitting there. I just sat back there, and I got dirty looks from some of the black people. I got dirty looks from some of the white people. Finally, I looked up and it said colored section. And I didn't get up and move, I stayed there. But that was the first day of my bus ride. From then on, I meandered up to the front and I sat in the front. But the black people weren't allowed to sit. They had to sit in their own section of the stands and drink in fountains. There was white and black drinking fountains. And there was none of this in Southern California. And it kind of startled me and it woke me up to what people were going through. And then I came up the big leagues in 47, and all this turmoil about, and Jackie coming into the league, why, I wasn't surprised he was there, because I've seen him play. I knew he was a big league ball player, and he was going to help him win a pennant one of these years. And all the static that was in the papers and everything, and things, the profanity and the racial slurs that were hollered from the other team's dugout, things like that, I was startled at because I wasn't brought up that way. And but I understood to a certain extent of what was going on. They're still fighting the Civil War, these guys. And so finally, I was embarrassed a few times. In Philadelphia one night, the big fat guy named Pete that had a gravel voice, and he was on Jackie something terrible. And I was embarrassed what he was hollering at Jackie. I was truly embarrassed at what he was hollering. And Jackie took it in stride. He wouldn't acknowledge the guy or anything. He just played the game and ended up getting a couple more base hits and win another ball game. But he was schooled well by Branch Rickey, and I know Rachel did a wonderful job. His wife did a wonderful job helping him through that situation.
Were you there the day in Cincinnati where Pee-wee went and put his arm around Jackie?
Yeah, I was there. And Pee-wee walked over, and fans were on him pretty heavy, and Pee-wee went over and put his arm around him, and that sort of quieted the fans because Pee-wee was from Louisville, Kentucky, and when he put his arm around him, well, that shut a lot of people up because Louisville isn't very far from Cincinnati, and a lot of his friends were there. I remember that very well. And Jackie, to his dying day, would thank Pee-wee for doing what he did.
Now, I know there was a small group of Dodgers, Southern-born, I believe Dixie Walker, and some. They were invited by Branch Rickey to leave if they wanted to, because this was going to work. It seemed that there were more special Dodgers than not, though, and you had a wonderful clubhouse for Jackie. Could you talk about that clubhouse, the Farrellos and the Reeses?
Well, I'll tell you, there were three or four guys that passed a petition around in the clubhouse and took it to each player, wanted them to sign it, and the petition said, I will not participate in a game that Jackie Robinson is in the lineup. And nobody signed it. Just the four guys that took the petition around were the only ones that signed it. And they brought it to me, and I said, what are you talking about? I said, this guy's an idol of mine.